Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. So this is basically my third attempt at this podcast, and that is also mainly because the kind of topic I'm handling at the moment. So I'm going to keep it very, very organic. So if I'm going to make mistakes, if I'm going to drift away from the topic a bit, I will keep myself recording. So you see, can also feel the effort that goes into creating a podcast. welcome to the 16th episode of Iftar for Soul. And actually, it is really quite a lovely day today. And I am very looking forward to go out for a small trip with my bike. And not overdo it, not to get thirsty. And anyway, the days are getting longer now and the nights shorter, so it's the iftar is also a bit later. Before I get onto this topic today, it could be a 30 minutes podcast. I think the my attempts to keep it between 15 to 20 minutes have failed so far, so I think I'm just going to be straight here and say it's going to be 30 minutes, so I don't feel bad every single time I cross the margin of 20 minutes. So actually the surah at hand, it's really fascinating how until now how much Allah has emphasized the importance of not only knowledge but also the evils that we have within us, that drive us away from the path of enlightenment, so to say. And these evils are more or less, how we get blinded by our greed, how much we like to run after worldly gains, how distorted our definitions are about success, about if we are loved by universe or by God, by Allah, whatever, however you want to call that, or how we feel blessed. In all of the definitions of gratitude and when do we feel that we can finally say thanks, all of that, and I've come to realize that the more we depend, the more we define all of that based on worldly gains, we will never end up being satisfied in our lives. We will never be content with it. The reason for that, which is also a blessing and a curse at the same time, that the world is very dynamic. What was considered success yesterday will not be considered what it is today and will not be considered tomorrow. So if at the time of my grandparents, if it was success that you had a house by the age of 35, you had a child, you were married, all of that was considered success back in the time. But in today's time, this is not what success is considered, for most part. So there are still people who think that way, but I'm not criticizing any kind of thought at the moment. I'm just saying that definitions change over time. Like, for example, what society wants from you can change. And if you want to start basing your success on these standards, there's a huge chance that we will end up being discontent in our lives. This discontentment will always creep in, because sometimes it happens that, okay, you know what, this is what's cool now, or this is what's in at the moment, so I'm going to put my effort to be like that. And imagine you arrive there, then it's not that cool thing anymore, and then it's the next thing. So then there's this constant struggle. There's just racing, and it's really interesting for me that all of this is coming right in the beginning of Islam, that Allah is teaching, is making our character, he's preparing us for what's going to come next. And there's a very there's a very profound saying of Aisha radiallahu anha, the wife of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, where she said that if zina, like for example, zina is fornication, if zina and change in lifestyle such as alcohol was banned from day one in Islam, no one would have approached this faith. So it's like even she herself is saying that, and you see that we have not touched the depths of Islam and the kind the kind of society and the kind of teachings that I saw around me growing up. And it's beautiful how Islam, until now, it's been 16 revelations, how much Allah is focusing on us, like we as human, what we are as a human, what we are made up of, what stands in our way. And it's quite striking to see this is exactly what motivational speakers will talk about these days. I've heard from so many people these days that you should own your happiness, you should own your you should not define your success based on what you see around. You should do what you want to do, follow your dreams, know that you can succeed, know that you can you are designed to achieve more in life. So you know it's amazing. All of this is something that Allah has been talking about. Islam has just become a for me, what I see around Islam has just become a book of do's and don'ts. But this is not what Islam is. This is a very narrow-minded approach to religion, at least to Islam, I would say. That people, you know, we love to be called open-minded people. Who doesn't? Okay, a funny statement comes to my mind. Like, you know, I don't believe in ghosts, but at night I'm more open-minded. I think it's such a cool statement. But anyway, you know, we all like to be open-minded. So I think when it comes to Islam, we also need an open mind to approach this. That so many scholars have had the opinion that what you get from Islam is based on how you approach it. So how you approach Quran, what you see in Quran is basically what you thought that you would find in it. It's that's a miracle of the Quran itself, and I think it's beautiful. Like, anyway, that's how it works. It's not the scope of this podcast, but anyway, the surah that I'm going to talk about, I'm really sorry for the tangents that I went in, but this is the central theme of the surah. Actually, the surah is called Surah At-Takathur, and it means, one translation of this that has come across is rivalry in world increase, and in the other it's called a mutual rivalry. Imam Sayyid Abu'l-Ala Maududi translates it as mutual rivalry. And yesterday we just talked about this word, remember, Kawthar, which was the source of abundance. So abundance is like limitless abundance, but Kawthar was a source of this limitless abundance. So imagine how limitless that is in itself. And here, the opening of the surah is also Al-Hakam Al-Takathur, that Allah talks about the competition for more gains diverts you. But diverts you from what? So Dr. Mustafa Khattab, he says that it diverts you from Allah. But Sahih International, you know, does it in another way. It says that competition and worldly increase diverts you. But this is not the surah, this is not the ayah that I'm going to talk about. But just to give you a small preface of what I'm going to talk about later, I'd like to talk about this ayah that, you know, this competition in worldly gain. But, you know, what competition, you know, it sounds, let's make it more relatable in today's times. You know, we think that, okay, you know, if a person, look at that person, right? He's 25, he's 26, he's finished his bachelor's, he's working already. So, you know, you start, someone else might say, oh, you know, he's already married, he has a kid, he has a house, his life would be so nice, he's already successful. I wish I had his life. Look at me, I'm still single. I'm still working. I'm already working. Should I get another degree? Should I study again? But why should I study again? I'm 35 now. You know, it's not my age to study anymore. Or, you know, especially in the culture where I come from. Look at your cousin. See what he has done. See his grades. Look at you. You're not bright enough. You're not a bright student. You know, this guilt that parents usually give to their children of looking by comparing them to other kids. I mean, I know their intention is to motivate to their kids to perform better, but perhaps this is not the best way to do that, because we this is what we learn at the end of the day. If we are taught that we are going to look at others to define our lives, to define what we have to do in life, then this is what will take us with us to the grave, unless we reflect upon all of this. You know, this continuous competition we feel, even in the friends group. If I'm running a food blog on Instagram, sometimes I feel this competition also. I want to be the first one to go to a certain cafe. I want to be the first one to try this food. I want to be the first one. They got free food packages. Why did not I get any? Or they were invited to that restaurant's opening. Why was not I invited? You know, this, as much as we want to run away from it, this will always be a part of us. But we need to just to learn how to navigate through this urge. You know, sometimes we put so much effort in getting rid of something that is in intrinsic about us. You know, perhaps it will be more productive if we learn how to navigate or channel this emotion in other healthier ways. And there's nothing wrong in having these emotions. Emotions, well, also, you know, if you are moving in a certain direction, so well, okay. It was not completely wrong if I said emotions. So there's nothing wrong in wanting better, in aspiring for something good in life. Because I think this is also one of the ways that science has come so, you know, science has made huge progress, because we always wanted to go for something better, so a better solution, an effective solution. So there is no harm in aiming for something better, something good, but it should not be a competition of who has more of what. When it starts to become that is where, you know, it gets a bit more dangerous, I think. You know, for example, if I want something just because someone else has it, that's where, you know, the red flag goes up. Like, if we take pride in knowing that we are different people, why can't we just take pride that, okay, if we are different people, perhaps even our success should be also different? But what is success then at the end of the day, right? Then we go back again at the root of this. When can we start feeling blessed? When can we start feeling gratification? We think that Allah doesn't love us if we don't have a job, if we don't have a house, or if I'm living in a shared apartment, or if I'm not having the job that I wanted. We start thinking, okay, Allah doesn't love us, or we start to calibrate our love from God, Allah, universe, based on what we have on worldly terms, on materialistic level, right? There's this beautiful statement of Imam al-Mahdi that I'd like to mention again, that that this one pursuit that we have is so occupying that we are left no time or opportunity for pursuing higher things in life. And because we are so busy bragging, boasting, you know, okay, you know, there's this active arrogance that we all know about. That I don't need to explain that. But you know, sometimes this passive or subtle arrogance is that, you know, if we have bought something new, like a new purse, especially if it's LV or any other big brand, we like to show it, especially in a photo. I mean, imagine, would you place your wallet or your purse, whatever, on the table and take a photo had it been a regular one? I mean, that's something on Instagram all the time. You know, you see these caps with this big logos right there in front of you. You know, that's boasting. You know, that's like, this is what I ask myself. I mean, maybe it's not boasting. I'm no one to judge their intentions, but this is what it comes across as. But having lived in Dubai, I know this form of boasting very well. People would actually bring their lunch boxes, even if the lunch box was an ugly box, but the bag they would carry their lunch box in was from one of these designer brands, just to show, make a statement that they were shopping there. They could have taken a tote bag. They could have did this, you know, this cloth bag, but no. So, you know, and I, when you talk to them, it comes out. Or for example, like, my child, he got into Stanford, by the way, or he got into MIT, or he topped the class, just to throw it out there. Why? For what? I mean, subhanAllah, alhamdulillah, that your child has been blessed with that, or you have been blessed with that, or someone has been blessed with it. But then just, if you think this could hurt the other person, then just don't talk about it. If you know if the other person is going through a rough time, if a person has been recently broken up with a partner, then don't talk about how lovely your marriage or your relationship is going. or for example, if a woman, I'm talking about this because it's a very sensitive topic for many people these days. If a woman cannot have a child or doesn't want to have a child, don't rub it on her face that how complete she would feel if she would take a child. You don't know the struggle that she's going through. So why would you want to? If someone has made you happy, doesn't mean that it will make everyone happy. And I'm really sorry that again I went to another tangent. This was not the worst I wanted to talk about it, and I'll end up talking about it. Okay, I'll try to talk about the other two verses, ayat 5 and 7 actually. That say, كَلَّا لَوْ تَعْلَمُونَ عِلْمَ الْيَقِينَ, ayah 5. No, if you only knew with knowledge of certainty. And then it says, ثُمَّ لَتَرَوُنَّهَا عَيْنَ الْيَقِينَ. Then you will surely see it with the eye of certainty. So yaqeen is what it, the both were ayah end on. Now what is yaqeen? Yaqeen, people who speak Urdu, Hindi, Arabic, Persian, they might know what yaqeen is. Yaqeen is belief. But in the sense that it is used here, it's different. Yaqeen is, according to Imam Raghib, it's something that is stronger than iman, stronger than belief, stronger than faith. Imam Abu Hilal al-Askari says, it is sukoon al-nafs. It is the comfort of yourself, of your nafs. Nafs is a topic we talked about several in the previous podcast. Nafs is us, in us. And sukoon is comfort, it's tranquility. And so what it means is basically, it is deep inside you, you are satisfied. That, you know, you are... You know that this is it. Like, for example, in English, you would call it a solid conviction. That is yaqeen. So if you know you're going to take a shower, you're going to get wet. Or if you put water on you, you're going to get wet. I mean, that's how... that is what basically yaqeen is. So in Islam, Quran talks about three kinds of yaqeen. And I think it's such a deep message. And I love this message, to be honest. There is this ilmul yaqeen. Yaqeen that is derived from your ilm, your knowledge. Aynul yaqeen, yaqeen that is when you see it. Seeing is believing. The third one, haqqul yaqeen. This haqqul yaqeen is basically the final level of certainty, which is gained through experience usually. So let me give you an example. And before I say that, actually in the Quran, in some places, death is interchanged by yaqeen. So, you know, no matter if you have a religion or not, no matter what civilization you have ever belonged to or you're in or you will belong to, that's one conviction we all know. We will die one day. What happens after that is then, you know, is basically a quest we need to get on. I think we need to get on. I think we should be prepared. We should prepare ourselves for what's coming next. At least we should know. We should have a conviction of what's coming next. If we are convinced, if my yaqeen tells me there's nothing, okay, fair enough. But I think it's a quest that is I would say it's highly encouraged, because it can put many things in perspective in our lives, especially the things that we run after. Anyway, so let's say there's a fire, right? Oh, sorry. Let's say you're driving down a road and you see smoke coming up. Then you see, okay, I see it. Perhaps it's a smoke, right? But it's not. It's a yaqeen that comes from your knowledge, because you know, okay, if you're driving down a road and if you see a huge smoke coming up, it's probably fire. So that's your ilmul yaqeen. But if you actually go and see it, it's aynul yaqeen, because you see it, right? And Allah talks about these two yaqeen here. In other places in Quran, Allah talks about haqqul yaqeen. But I will not get into that at the moment. This final level of certainty. This is the supreme truth. But it's in Sufism, it is. It has a very high. It has quite a philosophical text on this. So I'm not going to get into that at the moment. What haqqul yaqeen is, but also it is mentioned in the Quran elsewhere. So ilmul yaqeen and haqqul yaqeen. So many people argue, you know, what's really striking for me, that when I was going through this explanation of the surah, that even if we claim to be so progressive and we are living in a very modern times and whatnot, the argument that people give sometimes is exactly what the people back in the time in 1400 years ago would used to give in Quraysh. That, you know, the Quran is all about signs. Quran is just parables. Quran gives you a sign everywhere. Quran is like, look around you. Explore, look around, look at the sun, the moon, the day, how the day changes to night, how night changes to day, how a barren earth is not giving any fruit, and after some time it gives you fruit. And then again, there is no fruit. See, look at the water cycle. The water evaporates, it goes up and comes down as rain. And that is in the Quran, the water cycle. Quran even talks about the embryonic development of a child in the womb. The first revelation that I talked about, Iqra bismi rabbika alladhi khalaq, the first episode. If you go right after that ayah, Allah talks about it. It talks about this clinging substance, which points towards the discharge of the discharge from a man. So you know, you see that Allah talks about signs, and people used to say that, no, if I don't see it, I'm not going to believe it. You know, that this mindset that we usually have, right? That I'm only going to believe if I see it. So they used to say that we don't want to believe in this knowledge. We want to believe it if we see it. But what Allah argues is that you don't need to see fire to run away from it. You don't need to, you know, you have a higher intellect. I expect more from you. Use your logic, use your mind, think about it, question it, and use your ilmul yaqeen to think that you are going to come back towards me, and then you're going to be held accountable for what you have done. So stop running after worldly things. And I find this such a powerful statement, because even if we say that, you know, all of this is making us happy, it's, you know, I'm living my life, and you know, I'm young, and I'm going to go out, party, or whatever, you know, however people define their happiness, but based on worldly affairs. One can ask why are we living in times when depression and anxiety, people suffering from that, are the most we are living in times when we have the highest percentage of people suffering from depression and anxiety than ever before in the history of mankind. Why is it like that? And ironically, it is also the time when we also have the most millionaires on earth. I mean, in New York, for example, you know, $1 million is not, it doesn't make you rich. You're not rich enough to be living in Manhattan. That's at least what I have heard. Please, my listeners in US, I don't know how true is that, but this is what I've heard also from people, you know, my friends from US. That's what they say. Like, being a millionaire in New York and down in Manhattan is not a big thing anymore. And all of this, the access we have to healthcare, the access we have to food, water, clean water, it is insane how much of quality of life that we live in right now, that our life expectancy has increased, perhaps doubled, if you compare it to what we used to have before in the Middle Ages. Yet we are living in times where depression and anxiety is so much on the rise. We are so connected to our friends and family through our smartphone, yet it leaves us so anxious still at the end of the day. My mom used to tell me, she was like, Rizwan, I don't understand you. Why are you so anxious if you don't get a text or whatever? I wouldn't hear from your dad sometimes for 2 weeks because it would take 2 weeks for a letter to arrive to me. And then imagine sending a message on WhatsApp and you get a message after 2 weeks. We don't get a message for 2 days, we think the person is not interested anymore or something went wrong. So, you know, it's like, this is what Allah is saying, that Allah brings the attention of the human back to this aspect, that, you know, you have been created with a higher intellect. You're not an animal that you need to see to run away from it. Look at what's around you. See the signs that I'm giving you. Think about them. Ponder upon them. That is why, this is all one of the reasons why, knowledge was also the first thing that we learned. So I can connect this podcast, this episode, to the first episode that I did about knowledge. This is why Allah is saying, seek knowledge and you will know the truth. But then again, this is from an Islamic perspective. And if you are not if you're not a Muslim, or if you are, you know, if you're just out on your spiritual quest, then I would try to encourage you to interpret this message in your own way, in your own spiritual way. Right? What does universe want from me? What is this universe? How is it functioning? If it's self-care, if it's self-love, how much of self-care and self-love do I have to give myself before it turns into, you know, selfishness and lack of consideration and empathy? How much self-love can I give myself? And that's a question I can also ask. We should give self-love. Even in the Quran it says. The Quran does not allow people to torture themselves. And this is one of the reasons people use also to argue that the alcohol and all of this was not allowed, because it did more harm than it brought good. It did, you know, some people also tell me that, yeah, wine has benefits. It does. No one says no to that, but the harm it brings on a more communal, social than individual level is different. I mean, talk to people who have lost their parents or their loved ones to alcohol consumptions and all that. I don't want to get into that tangent right now, but what I'm trying to say here is that we need to think, we need to walk, we need to get out of our comfort zones, and we need to question ourselves, deeply question ourselves, our convictions, our yaqeen. That's what Allah says. That you want to see things, you will see. I will show them to you, but I'm not going to show them to you now. Now, use your intellect. And I think this is so beautiful that Allah is pushing people to use their intellect. Ilmul yaqeen is basically that, your knowledge. Sometimes I feel, you know, it's just remarkable how many people I've met that they have an opinion on Quran without even having read it. But what I mean by reading, I don't mean by, okay, reading the first ayah, and okay, this is the translation. This is the ayah. No, study it. Quran is not a book that you can just take out of your shelf and you just sit down and you feel entitled, okay, you can give 3 stars, okay, no, I don't like the subject, it's just too aggressive for me, it's too much hell and too much heaven. No, I don't want that. I want something more tranquil in my life right now. I'm looking for peace. So this is too much negativity for me. So you know this, I'm not saying this from anywhere. I've heard these things happen. Right. I mean, this is the reason why I my relationship to Quran was very questionable in the beginning. So seeking knowledge, whatever that is very important. I cannot have an opinion on something that I've not studied. And I can talk so long on ilm al-yaqeen only. Ilm al-yaqeen, sorry. And then, you know, in the last ayah, it's beautiful what Allah says. ثُمَّ لَتُسْأَلُنَا يَوْمَ أَيْذٍ عَنِ النَّعِيمِ. Then you will surely be asked that day about pleasure. Na'im is a blessing that is consistent. What are examples of consistent blessings? You open your eyes in the morning, you can see. You wanted to walk, you wanted to take steps towards a certain place from go to point A to B, you went without any pain, without anything, you were able to walk. You were able to cycle, you were able to sit in your car, get in the car, go to your work, completely fine, come back and sleep, take a nap. Ask people what blessing sleep is from those suffering from insomnia, from suffering from anxiety. They can't sleep. You were hungry, you went to the fridge, you took out something you could eat. Ask people who do not have, who have to go around to look for food. It might even shock you, because since Prophet Muhammad was, you know, the ruler of Arabia at that time, Prophet Muhammad used to go hungry several times. One night he was out and he saw two of his companions, Abu Bakr and Umar, who were the first and the second caliph respectively. He saw that they were also hungry. So imagine, the Prophet Muhammad was hungry at a night in Mecca, and he is in Medina, sorry. And he is one of the, I don't know if at that point he was a ruler of Arabia or not, but his position was already, he was the leader of the community there. And he's hungry. Go to this Saudi Arabia and UAE. You have so much poverty out there, but you see the rulers living in this lavish palaces. Now, so when Prophet Muhammad, you know, they were out looking for food, and then he talked to them, and then he was like, You're also hungry? He said, yes, we are also hungry. And then they went to one of the companions who had more wealth, and then he prepared dinner for them. And then Prophet ﷺ said to them, Allah will ask you about this. So you know, I think it really depends on your approach, how you approach this topic about being asked. I think if it instills fear in you in a destructive way, then you're not trying to take the wisdom here in a healthy way. Because the wisdom here is that we consider the blessing that we are having, because we should not get into this vicious loop of being ungrateful, of not being able to identify that if I'm, again, I've talked about this before in my podcast, that even the blessing to be able to sleep in our own bed, some people are not even happy in their own beds because, like, yeah, the mattress is not good enough. I mean, I like my mattress, but I want to have another mattress. And then you have, and then you pay another 5,000, another 3,500, 1,000 euro for this bed, for this mattress, and you're like, oh, no, I don't know, my back doesn't feel well. And then you buy another mattress, then you buy another pillow, then you buy another. It just goes on. Stop somewhere. It's completely fine to improve your quality of life. Again, I'm not going against it. But don't turn into a competition with something. So yeah, I think this Ayn al-Yaqeen and Ilm al-Yaqeen was something so powerful for me that this is a surah that I have been reading since 10 years now. And I really like the surah because it's so rhythmic. The last surahs, I think you've heard me say this quite often, these rhythmic surahs, because the last juz of the Quran, so the Quran is divided into 30 parts. The last part of the Quran has, I think, 27 surah or 26, I don't know. And they're shorter surahs compared to all the other surahs. And they're just so short and sweet and so easy to learn. So I used to, it's an eight ayah surah, and I used to recite this so often. But today is the first time, few hours ago, that I found out about this Ilm al-Yaqeen, Ayn al-Yaqeen, and Haqq al-Yaqeen. It's just such a beautiful concept that how Allah is, through Ilm al-Yaqeen, Allah is not only encouraging you to seek knowledge, but also use your logic. This is what researchers do, you know, that sometimes they don't, you know, they based on the data they have, they derive something from it. Statisticians, that's what they do all the time. Data analysts, that's what they do. And that's what Allah is saying. Look, seek knowledge, see what's around you, then derive something from it. And you'll have the answer. So I hope and I pray to Allah that he blesses us with the light of knowledge, He blesses us with the light of guidance, and that He puts us in our heart the seed that grows into something beautiful and makes us the best version of ourselves. Wa akhiru da'wana alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.